Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, our guest multiple times, Kim Young, Sassy Jack Stitchery. Kim, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back. It's one of my favorite places to be. It's always a lot of fun. So thank you.
Yep. Well, this time is, well, they're all special, but this is extra special because this year, Kim and Sassy Jacks are celebrating 5 years since she opened her shop.
Yay!
Yeah. Well, and when you look at that, now, okay, so just for the technical part, you were online in 2014, then you opened your shop in 2017, just for those who get nitpicky about those things.
But, yeah.
But, you know, we talk about 5 years and you go, oh, good. That, you know, that's a nice number for a shop to have lasted 5 years. But if we look back at the 5 years you lasted.
Yeah, it feels like 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
I couldn't have picked a better 5 years, I'm telling you.
Man. Jeez. Yeah. That, you know, that opening a shop is huge. And so you had a little online warm-up, but really just kind of a warm-up. That the decision to open a shop and, you know, incur all that overhead, and, boy, you had such a beautiful shop right there downtown on the corner. What's that like to just sit down one day and say, you know, I think this is where we're going to go with this thing?
Well, let me tell you the backstory of how that actually happened. So we were tiny. So we opened in 2014 because I had a bunch of friends in Raleigh that were just bugging me to open. And I know we told that story before, so I won't go into detail, but I kept my day job. And so the whole time I had it from 2014 until actually right after we opened in 2017, I was still employed as, you know, a corporate controller, chief financial officer for a public company. And so I kept my day job that whole time. And at the same time, you know, we were working on the Baird House. We had purchased it. And I had moved back home in late 2016. And we went ahead and scheduled a class for St. Patrick's Day, March 17th of 2017, thinking, for sure, we'll be done in a year. And, you know, we got to December of 2016 and I was like, uh-oh. And so I said, we've got to find a shop space. And so that's when we went ahead and bit the bullet and went out and found a shop space. And I was just really super lucky that space on Main Street there in Weaverville was open. And it had not been open in 100 years. I mean, there had been a furniture store that had been in that spot for 100 years that had just closed down. And most of those shops on Main Street, for the most part, stay there or they get sold to somebody else and they stay there. They just don't turn over. And so there was this whole building there that was open and available. And we were able to contract for that. But we really did it at the time that we did it so that we could have a shop space for the 46 person class that we had on the first day that we were open as a shop.
Oh no.
You know, I just don't do it small, Gary. It's no. Just, you're in for a penny and for a pound, right?
That's right.
So we got it open there and we did our class off site at a local church, which churches are great places to do that. And then we had our first day in our shop on St. Patrick's Day 2017, and it was really fun. I look back at the pictures, though, and I thought I had a ton of inventory in there. But I look back at the pictures, and it looks kind of naked, empty. And I know it wasn't because it took, you know, like 3 or 4 days to set it all up, you know, just what we had in there. But with a bunch of people, we had a bunch of people helping us. But, you know, it's funny when you look back at pictures and you realize, you know, how far you've come and stuff. It was just an interesting journey. But yeah, that's why we ended up biting the bullet when we did to open when we did. We had to. Yep. Nothing like painting yourself into a corner.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and that I didn't realize that you already owned the Baird House. So that was originally going to be the shop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bought that. Well, I looked for a place. I started looking for a place in 2014, and a lot of things fell through, and I was only looking here in Asheville because I knew I wanted to move home, and stuff just kept falling through, and I kept getting outbid on properties and stuff, and I was watching the Baird House. It was on a commercial website for sales, and it was in repossession, and it was literally, you know, it's literally about a half a mile from the house where I grew up. So I knew it, and I drove by it all the time as a kid, and it looked like a big dollhouse, and there was some sentimental value there, but it was too expensive for me for what I felt like I could afford. And finally it got down to a price I thought I could negotiate down further, and the bank really wanted to get rid of it. And so I got involved at that point, and we went ahead and purchased it in 2014, and we did nothing to it until 2015. When I moved to St. Croix, I felt like that would be a good time to start working on the house. So I hired a handyman who basically lived in a house here in town and worked on it for a whole year while I was away. And then, you know, by the time I got back in 2016, we'd gotten a lot of the big work done. And, but yeah, we it was always intended to be the shop home, and we only went to Weaverville as kind of a last minute punt. We just had to. So, yeah. But it was a good space for us, you know, and people loved it, and it was in close proximity to, you know, restaurants and coffee shops, and the quilt shop opened up right after we did. And so, you know, we had a little partner in crime there, and it was a very, very good space for us. And, you know, a lot of times you look back on the really weird twists and turns your life takes, and you're like, yeah, actually, I think it was meant to be that way. And yeah, I do. Yeah. You know, I think it was intended to be that way. I think it was one of the things that helped us be successful in the beginning, was being right there. So, yeah.
Well, pre-pandemic, you really had an ideal setup for a shop, with a quilt shop next door and that massive upstairs space for classroom right on a corner, all the restaurants. I mean, that was really a tremendous space, and then the pandemic wrecked that fun.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have planned it better. And actually, Angie and I, we went to the quilt market in October of 2018, and we decided to use that space upstairs for classroom. And so we went back and negotiated that lease and picked up that class space, and we turned it really quick into something that I thought was fantastic for us, at least. And I think she loves it. She's still there, and it looks now like a quilting studio, though. It doesn't look like a classroom space for us. It's more for quilters, which is what she needed. Yeah, that was just, it was great to have that happen. And, you know, one thing I do want to touch on is, because you mentioned, you know, how things really kind of took off in the pandemic for that. Well, you didn't mention, but we were talking about it before, about the craft industry and stitching and stuff. But when I opened the shop in 2017, I had lots of people asking me what I was thinking. Like, this is a terrible time to open a shop. What are you thinking? You know what I mean? Like, right. They were just like, there's no future in cross stitch, Kim. What exactly are you doing here? And so it was kind of interesting too, just the timing of everything, because cross stitch, I think, was bubbling back there. And I think it was coming around, and it's just that we did not see that segment of the industry. And I will admit that I did not see it either. I just had a plan. And, you know, I kind of thought there were a lot of people out there stitching, and that we would be fine. I never thought that we would do as well as we did for a young shop like that, because it typically would take 10 years to get to where we did in about 3. And, you know, it didn't happen that way because of me. It happened just because of timing. And, you know, timing, they say a lot, is everything. It's cliche, but, you know, it was just the right time to do it. And then the pandemic, I think it's a horrible thing, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. And I wish we didn't have it, but it was actually, our industry thrived during this time. You know, we've actually kind of risen to the occasion and, you know, met the needs of people who are at home and looking for something to do, or getting back to something they used to do. So, yeah, it's been an interesting time period. And I do think that space that we had, to your point, was just perfect. It was great. I think the new space will be good too. It'll be very different kind of feel and, personhood to it. But, it was hard to make the transition into the new space because I had in my head for several years what the shop was going to look like, and I just couldn't figure out how to transition into that big open space. And then once I was there, then I had to retransition back into the vision, the original vision, or an updated vision of the shop space in the house. And that was a hard turn for me too. You know, it's weird to go from one to the other and then back, but
right.
So is the new Baird house going to have a big open space for like a classroom like you had at the old shop?
It will eventually, but it won't in the beginning. So, you know, it's a house, and that's the difference in that is it's got rooms that divided off. And there was one wall that had to come down to put some structural support in, and we left it down. But basically, we plan on just having the downstairs be the shop space. And it's a pretty good size house, and it'll be big enough for us. But it will take a lot more savvy and skill in display to fit everything in there. Everett keeps looking at me going, there's no way, Kim, there's no way. And I'm like, oh, just buckle up, Betty, buckle up. It'll happen. You know, I'm a good Tetris player. And so, you know, so in the beginning, we'll have space to sit and stitch in there, but it won't be class space. But we do have about an acre of property there. And so we've already put together plans for a classroom building. And it's really been all I could do to not go ahead and launch that and start the, you know, process of getting it done, because I desperately want to, because it's another thing I have, you know, all the vision for, and I've done the plans and I've talked to people and blah, blah, blah. But I really have to finish one. So, you know, I'm a good starter. Right? You know, I'm a really good starter, but I really have to finish this one. And so we're pretty close to being finished, and we will, as soon as we get into the shop and get it physically open, we will immediately in the background start the plans for building that classroom building back there, because there's plenty of space for it. So
yeah, that that Baird House, that's a testament to remodeling and converting an old house into a business pretty much in your spare time when you have a chance. And I'm sure there's along the way been a truckload of little surprises when you open a wall. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I had no idea what I was doing when I did that. And the sad part is that Everett and I were just dating at that point, and he walked in there with me too. So he was, you know, he was also in for a penny, in for a pound. I think he was just deeply in love. And now he's like, whoa, I don't know if he'd do it again now. But, and I did marry him in that process. I thought, oh, we've got to lock this down. We're not going to get done very quickly. So I went ahead and married him. But, you know, it's a, it was a big deal, a lot bigger deal than I really comprehended. And I think the reason that it's been such a big deal to get it all done is because we've done it well. You know, I think you can go into a place like that and you can hire the work out and it'll get done, and it'll get done quick, and it'll look okay. But over the years, you start to see the quality of work come through, be it good or bad. And what we did with it, because we're both from here, and especially me being from Woodfin, and knowing the family that, you know, I didn't know them personally, but my family did, you know, and everybody knew about the family that lived there, you know, wanting to do it right and taking the time to actually hand do everything and make sure you did it right and not just throwing stuff in there. And like, even as recently as last weekend, we had to, you know, when you have a two-story house like that that never had electricity upstairs, let alone a heat system, you have to find a place to run all the piping and the wires up from the basement to the attic. And so we chose a corner of one of the rooms and we ran everything up one corner. Well, then you have to box it in. And so instead of just putting up, like, you know, drywall or whatever, we actually used spare pieces of wood from the house and, you know, tongue and groove wood, and fit it into the corner on both floors and boxed up that corner and then put some handmade trim on it that Everett made for it. It looks like it grew there. I mean, it has to be sanded and, you know, whatever we're going to do to it, painted or whatever. But that quality of work, you know, a third party would never have done that for us, you know. Right. And if they did, it would have just been, you know, ridiculously expensive. So we did that with everything we did. And when we had to remake something for something that was rotted or had disappeared somewhere, we made extra sets. And so they go in the attic, you know, and with examples of how to remake it again if they have to do it. So we really put a lot of we try to preserve and conserve and make it possible for that house to, we know it'll outlive us, but to even live another generation or two was the goal.
When you started, when you went, well, you kind of dove into the online or the brick and mortar shop right away. But how did your, at some point you had a plan for the business, I'm sure of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you pretty accurate with that, or did you find, okay. All right.
No. I do come from a business background, and, you know, you always like to think you know what you're doing, and to a degree, I think I did. I think my greatest asset is that I'm not afraid to roll with the punches, and I'm not afraid to change plans, you know, mid-course and or even earlier, and I think that is really key to anybody's success at anything you do in life. You just have to be prepared to handle change well. And thank goodness, right, with the last couple of years. But yeah, I really thought the business would be very small. And I thought that, you know, it would just be very, very small. And I never envisioned really kind of what was happening in the industry behind me that I didn't see coming. And then what happened during the pandemic. I never envisioned that the business would take off faster than I could manage it. And the other thing that didn't happen that I thought would happen that I think will happen now, you guys had a talk on your one of your shows a couple weeks ago about, this will take us down another rabbit hole, but I'll just throw it out a little bit, about, you know, the digital arena and PDFs versus hard copy charts.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Before we ever even opened the I thought this was funny because we were kind of on the same page with it. Before we ever even opened the shop, we planned to have large screen TVs in there where people could we would rotate through, like, not just the models that we didn't have in the shop for the things that we, you know, were selling the charts for, but also through some digital providers, which, you know, in 2017 were less, but there were still a lot out there. And then we would have a computer set up, a laptop set up, where a person could go onto the site of the provider and purchase and download their chart. And we would print it in good quality, as you mentioned, and what you were kind of envisioning. And then we would kit it for them. And so in the Baird House, the very first thing that we did after we took care of the outside was have the electrician come in, and he put in all the different plugs and stuff. And there are plugs already set up for those big screen TVs up in the corners of every room so that we could do that. And I thought that was kind of neat that you brought that up, because there was only a slight nuance in what you guys were thinking and what we were thinking. And, you know, I think we would do it, and we still will do it, where the people log into the side of the provider, because there's just too many of them, you know, for us to provide that ourselves. It would be hard on the backside to pull all that catalog in. But they can go out to wherever they want and purchase it, and then we'll print it in a nice quality. Or if they've already purchased it, you know, they can just download it from their account, and then we'll kit it for them. And I think that'll be great. So that didn't happen in our new shop, the shop we had in the last 5 years, just because our shop took off really quick. And it was just the right time. Again, you know, I think our customers are what caused us to grow, obviously, but we just had a really great group of customers and still do. And, you know, their word of mouth and their appreciation of our shop is what helped us grow as fast as we did. And, you know, word of mouth is great advertising. And so, you know, I really attribute that quick growth to just a really fantastic group of people. And a lot of those customers are good friends now, which is fun, because I met them, you know, in that first year. And, you know, they supported us through the pandemic, which all local shops, you know, that have made it through this have been supported by their customers, you know, and they were just really fantastic in what they did. You know, we had to cancel classes, and a lot of them left the money with us to be applied to a future shop. That meant a lot, you know, to us as a shop, because coming up with the money to refund everybody for canceled classes in 2020 was a big deal. And we refunded a lot of classes in 2020. And then I'd say, you know, 30% of the people left their money with us to go to future classes, which now has all been resolved. You know, we were able to start having classes again last year. But I think that was a big part of the growth factor for us, too. We just kind of exploded there in the beginning, because people were just so happy to have a shop. And in this area at that time, there was a shop in Hendersonville, which is about 45 minutes from us, but there wasn't anything here locally. And, you know, we had a lot of people coming up from Georgia and over from Tennessee. And so I think that helped us to kind of grow. But that growth, you know, had a price to it, because we weren't prepared for it.
Yeah.
And got to have all your infrastructure. Like, I remember for almost a whole year, we handwrote addresses on packages. And stood in line, went one by one, you know. And then when we hired Allie, she was like, "You've got to stop this. This is insane." I was like, "What do we do?" And she was like, "Just download a program." And so she got us set up on a program, you know, to print labels and stuff. And that's what we've been doing since then. But there's no way we could have made it if we had been handwriting labels. So, you know, some things happen that that I didn't expect, and some things that I really planned on didn't happen. And they were very hand in hand, you know, one kind of caused the other. We grew pretty fast and just had to attend to the basics, you know, and get through that. But, you know, one of the things that I'm proud of is that we did, throughout the whole thing, we've been a teaching shop. You know, our very first day, we had a class of, you know, 46 people, and they were friends and, you know, former classmates of mine at other needlework places that came to support us. And the instructor for that was Susan Greening Davis. And then we had Nikki of Nikki's Creations here with us. It was just a great time. And all through all of this, we have maintained our teaching you know, status. We've continued to try to have classes. And, you know, when the pandemic came through, we shifted to some online classes, and we continue to do that. And we'll continue to do that even as we shift out of that kind of pandemic, you know, era of how we did things. We will still continue to have online classes because we do have so many friends and customers and part of our stitching family now that want to be, continue to be part of what we are from a distance. You know, they just aren't local or can't travel. So, that was a change in focus too. I did not expect to have so many customers that weren't local. So that was not what I expected either. It was just a whole different world, really.
Yeah. Well, see, I think that it's that, you know, three-legged stool. I hate that. But anyway, you know, you've got online and then the shop and then the teaching aspect. But I think it's because you offered that consistently that's what allowed you to become what I refer to as a destination shop in rapid order. Most people, if they even get to that level, it takes a long time. But you had that, and you offer. So it's more than we have a bunch of thread and linen. Won't you come in and buy it? You know, you're putting back into the community, and then you get a two-way street that really feeds off of each other.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you bring that up. That's the other thing that we do try to do as a shop is give back to our community and be a good community member. And so not just our local community, but our larger needlework community. And so, you know, one of the things that we've done throughout pretty much the whole 5-year adventure is to create some things that we just give back that are free. And we've done a lot of little charts and stuff that we post out there for people. Some of them have been related to charity things that we'll do, and then we'll give money to a charity. And some of them have just been, hey, you know, here's something for you. And they're not all little charts. Like, we gave away a whole sampler, you know, and we've done that a few times on a limited basis, but there's one out there that's been free since the beginning of the pandemic and will always be free. You know, and I think stuff like that, is our way to let our family of stitchers know that we appreciate them, you know, and it might not all be their taste, but surely out of something that we put out there, somebody's going to like something. But that's our effort to, you know, let people know that we appreciate them and that we care about them. And so, you know, we have tried to do that as well and give back to the community. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that it's a multifaceted approach. And the other thing that we do with classes that, I feel like has been a bit unusual because I've definitely gotten feedback about it, is that we try to keep our classes very cost, the cost barrier very low for a class.
Yeah.
Because we don't price that class to make profit. We price the class to cover the expense of the class. You know, so it covers the kit and it covers the travel of the person coming in to teach, but we don't make any money on the class. It covers the food that the students might have and stuff like that. Because my philosophy on that is if you're going to come to a class with us, you've got other expenses to get here. You've got your own travel and your own hotel. And then if you want to purchase something from our shop, I think that's fantastic. That's where we should make our money as a shop. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it's more enjoyable for somebody to come and sit through a class and have a little bit of money to spend however they want in the shop. And it makes us happy too, you know, to make people happy in the shop, rather than to have them have to pay so much for a class that they get here and really all they can afford to do is eat and go home. That's no fun. You know, that's not what you come for. And so we really, and the other side of that too, is to give entry to some people who normally couldn't afford to go to, you know, a class with a name designer, you know. And so it's just been the way I started it, and I really like how it's worked. And I will be honest about that, too. I'm going to say virtually everything I have done as a shop owner, because I didn't really know the inside of the industry before I opened the shop. I had worked at a little shop a few times, you know, on the weekends and stuff, just to learn. But I didn't really know a lot about the industry or how things were done. I kind of just winged it. And if it worked, I kept it. And if it didn't, I didn't, you know. And so that's been kind of fun, too, to just go through the experiments of, you know, what actually works in the shop.
Yeah. Okay, you're flying along. The shop is just cooking. You got employees. Online is flying. You got classes. And then the pandemic hits. Take us through. That had to have been many an hour of what am I going to do? Because now I can't have employees in the shop. I've got this massive inventory that I got to, you know, I got orders coming in. I can't get the stuff I need. What was that like?
That was pretty brutal. So, okay. yeah, it was, you know, and in relatively new shop owner. So that happened in 2020 and we opened in 2017. It was 3 years to the day. Almost. It was March 13th when we closed our doors for the pandemic because we stopped the calendar there and never flipped it over. So I remember the day. And we opened on March 17th of 2017. So it was like 3 years to the day. So that point in time, we had just come back from market. And, you know, we shopped at market just like we normally did. We spent a ton of money at market. And we got home with all of our stuff. And within a week, we had to close our doors. So we never even had a market event. So we're sitting on all of this inventory that we just bought at market. People are scared. They're not sure what to do with their money. And you can't blame them because we feel the same way. And then you're looking out to the rest of the year on all these classes. And we had massive workshops scheduled starting in May of that year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they were coming up hot and heavy. And, you know, when we first closed, we thought, oh, maybe this will be over in 3 or 4 weeks, you know, and then it was like, okay, maybe it's going to be 3 months. And then here we are 2 years later. So it was a very fast paced kind of thing to figure out what to do. And, you know, we were already online. So that shift for us was easy to just focus on the online, but it was difficult throughout the pandemic because we reopened for a while in August of that year. And then we ended up having to close again in November. And we've been closed since then. So, you know, just kind of navigating what to do and when to do it. And the backlash that came from folks who were unhappy one way or the other, no matter what you decided, you know what I mean? It was just like,
right.
You just can't please everybody and you can't really blame people. It was a strange time, still is, although it's kind of the new normal, but you know, you've got people who just didn't want to wear a mask and didn't feel like they had to. And you've got employees who are worried about getting themselves or their family sick. And, you know, or like one of my shop employees, her husband's a diabetic. And so you really didn't, you know, you didn't want to be the source of anybody getting sick. And at that point in time, there was no vaccination. So a lot of people were dying or being hospitalized. It was more scary than it is now. And so it was a personal weight as well as a business weight on your shoulders, you know, because you had responsibility for your customers and responsibility for your employees and their families. And you just didn't want to be the source of anybody getting sick. And yet you're trying to keep your business alive. And, you know, it was not fun. And then on the business side of it, you know, all those classes. And I will tell you, and honest and true, that we, you know, I immediately – and this is more on the business side, but it's, you know, it was key to our ability to navigate. We had lots of big, big classes that year and we had to cancel them. And so, you know, I was looking at a lot of money that had to be refunded. And at the same time, I'm sitting there looking at the exact same moment at all of the linen that I had already ordered for the classes and paid for. And, you know, silks that had been ordered, you know, and supplies that were ordered and some of it paid for, some of it not. And either way, you don't want to you know, even if you haven't paid for it, you're not going to not take it and expect to survive in the industry because your vendors have the same issue,
right.
You know, so everybody has to get paid. And so when we closed our doors, and it actually, I might have done it right before we closed the doors because I saw it coming. I went out and took out a loan, you know, because I knew I was going to need it. I just, you know, my business is financed personally. I put my money into it personally, but I was not sitting on that kind of money to you know, refund all this stuff. And so I actually took out like a $52,000 loan, and every bit of it went to refunding classes.
Oh.
And then still, you know, like I said, there were about 30% of the people that left their money with us, which was very fortunate because, you know, at that point I would have been having to take money out of my own pocket to get folks refunded. So that really kind of saved our bacon because, I mean, right after that, nobody could source money. You know, there were no personal loans to be had or business loans to be had when the pandemic, you know, when people really realized what was happening. Banks kind of, you know, you had to go through these small business loans and everybody wanted them. And, you know, we never even joined that process because we didn't need it, where a lot of local businesses were getting funds, you know, through the funds that were provided by the government. We did not do that. Now we paid back that $52,000 last year. So we only had it out for, I think it was less than a year, but you know, it was kind of a short-term funding and I don't know how we could have done it without that. And so there were just a lot of any business that didn't make it through this is totally understandable. Any business that did, we're fortunate and lucky. That's all I can say about it. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, it was like having to have a crystal ball and they don't exist. You know, and you just have to go with your gut. And if your gut is not, you know, clear, proven, tried, and you're not lucky, you know, then things could have went sideways. So it was tough. There's no lie about that. It was just tough. And we made it through, you know, because I think we were, you know, on the personal side, I think we were blessed. I think we're meant to be here. I think we provide something to the people that we touch that, that's meant to be. And I think that's why we survived, to be quite honest. I don't think it was any kind of business savvy. I think it was just that there's a plan for us as a business. And as long as we do good things and are good to people and, you know, keep a good mission out there, I think we'll continue to do well. And I think that's why we've made it through so far. And, you know, that's my personal perspective on it. A little deep, but you know, I think those things are important because a lot of businesses are out there. I listen to a lot of podcasts on, you know, entrepreneurship and businesses and stuff. And, I think honest input sometimes is helpful to other people who are out there trying to make it through. So,
yeah, well, and that's it's an interesting time because while you're making those kinds of decisions, then needlework in general just takes off.
Yeah.
You know, so there you are. How are we going to survive?
So that's why we were able to pay the money back in a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, because the customers just jumped in and I mean, it was fabulous. And so in the beginning, I don't think it was even that needlework was really taken off necessarily. Is that in the beginning, I think our customers, once they got their head around what was happening to them personally, I think they immediately shifted focus and decided, oh my gosh, our businesses are going to die. You know, we're the only lifeline these businesses have. And they were correct. You know, if our customers had not jumped in and, you know, purchased things that they probably still haven't stitched, you know, to try to keep us alive, a lot of businesses would not have survived. And that was not just true of the needlework industry, but of the restaurant industry. You know, there's lots of places out there where people really showed their heart and they stepped up and they did things and they bought things that, you know, it for them, it felt like a small thing to do. For the business they did it for was huge. It made such a huge impact to keeping businesses afloat and alive during this. And so that happened. And then, you know, the needlework industry exploded. So, you know, and people who hadn't stitched since they were 14, you know, and they're now 50, were all of a sudden picking up needles, whether it was crochet needles or knitting needles or sewing needles or stitching needles or quilting needles. You know, it really exploded because people were at home and they felt that need to nest and to, you know, create things with their hands. Still, I think people got back to, their own like feeling of worth in the world and how good it feels to create, no matter what you use to create it. And so needlework is a very low barrier, low cost barrier entry to creation, you know, and you can create a lot of things with thread and needle that aren't very expensive. And so I think that, yeah, you're right. It exploded there too at the same time.
And then now you shut down your shop. That was seizing an opportunity more than anything, right?
Yeah. So we were open from August of 2020 up until, I want to say, around Thanksgiving. And then the pandemic kind of heated up again, and we felt like it was going to be a little more dangerous. And so we went ahead and closed up to customers, but we stayed open until the end of January. And so if you remember that we moved into this building in Weaverville in 2017 because we weren't done with our shop space that we intended, and now we've been there for 4 years. And so, you know, and it was expensive because it was Main Street. And so, you know, we only really had a 1 year lease there, and we were really good tenants. And so we just kept paying our bills, and we were able to pay our rent all through the pandemic, which a lot of people around us really were struggling, you know, but we were very blessed, as we just talked about, for the industry to have really done well. And, so we had a good relationship with our landlords. So we basically gave them a 3-month notice, since we weren't under lease anyway, and decided to just move out and go online because we just weren't sure when things were going to get back to normal. And then the other side of that really was, for me personally, I felt like I needed some motivation to finish my rehab project with the house. And as you know, the best motivator is a lack of comfort. And so if you are uncomfortable enough, you will make things happen. And so my sweet husband cleaned out. We got a pretty large underneath the house. It's kind of separated into three sections. One is his woodworking workshop. One is a garage. And the center part was used to be some like bedrooms down there. And it's just kind of a tile floor and some closets, and it's kind of open. And he liked to do some of his woodworking stuff over there. Well, he gave me that section. And so we went online and just moved into the basement. And it's an air basement. Like, you can walk outside to the driveway from it. So you get sunlight and everything in there, but it's still the basement. And so I knew that by doing that to myself, I would focus on the Baird House, and I was correct.
So you didn't like being in the basement? You didn't like being in the basement?
No, and, you know, but that was also an exercise in, you know, Tetris, because it's, how do you fit all this stuff in here that you're going to have to pull from every day? And so we kind of created walls with we have things on like rolly carts, like these big four shelved cart things that roll. And we had we were using some of those for shipping when we were at the Weaverville shop. And so we had pegboard attached to the back of some of those for threads, and we left that on there. We put it back on there when we got it into the basement. And so we created these like little paths and walkways. It's kind of like a I forget what those things are called, where you have to find your way out.
A maze.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely a maze. Yeah. Labyrinth is what I was thinking. But yeah. So it's a maze. So you kind of walk through the different areas to get to what you need, and it all fit in there. Not the fixtures. The fixtures had to go somewhere else, but the all the product and stuff is in there. So, and we've managed, you know, it's been over a year now. So we left at the end of January last year, and now here we are at the end of March. And so it's worked out really well. I mean, but it was an exercise in how to do this smartly, you know, and make sure that you can access everything. And you really can only have two people down there at one time, though. So it's hard. We've had three, but it gets a little crowded, especially when you've got animals running in and out. So, you know, my new cat, Herschel, he comes down to check on us sometimes, and he likes to bring his toys. So you'll hear him coming down the stairs, dragging this stick that has this like floppy worm on the end of it, and it jingles. So you hear every step of it jingling all the way down the stairs, and you're like, oh, here comes Herschel. And there's no room to play with him. So he just comes in there, and then he looks around for a while, and he drags it back up the stairs. But while he's there, you have to be careful not to step on him. So,
yeah,
so it's time to move. So we're ready.
Did you get to a point where you missed the shop and missed having the employees and the customers coming in and out? Is that something you miss? I don't know how that – I've never owned a shop, so I don't know. How does that work in your head? I mean, that's a – there's a daily lifeblood when you have people coming in and out that
– Yeah. Yeah, I did. So when I first moved at home, I was working by myself because my main helper was is Angie Weaver at the time, and she works part of the time for me and part of the year for my sister-in-law in the tax business. And so she was at work in the tax business when I first came home, and she didn't come back to me until June. So it was just me down there until June of last year, and it was weird, you know, and you've transitioned to where you're working from home, and it's really quiet, and, you know, you're finding your way through this new world, and it wasn't fun. And, you know, as a lot of people kind of went through in the pandemic, it was a shift, you know, and you're like, and, you know, I missed it. I did miss the people a lot, and I miss them even more now because, you know, we kind of got quiet there for a while because we had to survive, to be honest. We had so many orders coming through at the beginning of the pandemic that it was all we could do to keep up with it, and we didn't keep up with it very well, and I appreciate people kind of being understanding of that and hanging with us as we got ourselves caught up. But, you know, in order for us to survive and manage, we had to quiet down a little bit. You know, I don't know the right word for that, but we had to get kind of quiet and manage, you know, what was coming through. And so now that we're, you know, ramping up to move back into our shop and we've started to do the things that we really love to do and market and get involved with people again, it's such a good feeling, you know, and it's so exciting because there's so many more things that I want to do and that, you know, we as a shop really are looking forward to doing. So we have missed it. All of us have, you know, and Allie's here with me now working and, you know, it's just, it's exciting to be looking forward to relaunching in a way, you know, and you get to redefine yourself. It's kind of like when I left my corporate job and I got to decide who I wanted to be again and start a new career. It's a chance for a second beginning in a way, you know, and it's kind of fun. And because it's in a different space, it will be a different feel to the shop. And so I'm looking forward to what people think of it because I have a really clear idea of what it's going to be like and it'll be a little different. And I just hope they really like it. And so it'll be fun and it'll be fun for me to get back in there. You know, I'm ready to get out of the basement, of course, but, you know, yeah. To get back into a live shop where you've got people coming in, there's so much joy. And one of the neat things about the Baird House, when we bought it, it was pretty dilapidated. It had good bones and good structure, but it was really needed a lot, and it had been empty for 10 years. And people would come by and talk about the house, and there was one guy that he was on a journey of his own through an end-of-life experience. He was terminal, and he saw the house as a house that was in a terminal state. And I said, no, it's not. This house is waiting. This house is a lady in waiting. And she's hopeful and she's got joy in her heart. And she just can't wait to have, you know, people in her again. And he was like, well, that's not how I see it. I said, and that's probably not, this is not the house for you to write your story about, because you wanted to write a story. And that's how the Baird House has felt to me all along. And other people that have gone there have felt the same way, like she was just waiting for her chance, you know? And so everything that we've done to her has really just kind of put her clothes back on her, kind of put her hair back up, kind of put her makeup on, you know, she's got her dancing shoes on now because she's got her new rock work all around the outside. She's been getting ready too. And that house has such a feeling of joy in it and anticipation. I think that once the laughter and the joy of people get in there and the camaraderie that people feel together when they're doing something that they love, the whole thing is just going to be like, wow, you know, and that's, and of course I'm, you know, projecting on an inanimate object, but that's kind of the picture I have in my head, is that it's just, it's going to be a really great place to be. And I think just the joy of Stitchers being in there again, the house is going to feel alive, and it'll just be a really warm, happy place to be. And that's what I want. And that is kind of my philosophy on a shop, is that it, and it has always been the same, that has never changed, is that a shop for me, is a gathering place, and it's a place for community, right? And so it's a place where Stitchers can come and feel like they were meant to be, that they're with their tribe, they're part of the family there, and they just feel comfortable. The minute they walk in the door, they just feel comfortable. They can look around, they can talk to people, they can leave, they can go outside, they can come back, they can sit and stitch and laugh, you know. It's just like you just came home for a visit. And that's always kind of been my perspective. And so I'm pretty excited about, you know, having that come to be. And part of what we did with building that big flagstone patio in the back was to kind of add to that too, because we'll be able to put some tables out there and have people kind of hang out and eat some food if they want, you know. And we might try to provide treats, you know, one day a week. We work with a bakery and bring in some, you know, food on certain days of the week and stuff like that. So a lot of plans to just make it a fun, nice place to be. And so that's kind of where we're headed with that.
Road trip.
And I think, yeah. Yes. I think Stitchers miss that. I think, you know, yeah, we could, you know, maybe be able to get into a shop, go in, shop and leave. But it used to be a time where, you know, there were shops that, you know, had a space that, and they one day a week you could come and sit and stitch. And people miss that. We miss gathering with other like-minded people. You know, the internet's fine, Zoom is fine, but it's just not the same as gathering in person.
And there's a joy with that too, and it's invigorating. You know, it's just really invigorating, I think, to be with like-minded people, no matter what your passion is or what your art is, but to hang out with people who think like you do and find the same solace and enjoyment in working with their hands, I think is just, it you know, enlivens the senses and it's invigorating. And I think it's helpful to, you know, your desire to create, you know, and also community. You know, when we opened the shop before, we had folks that came in there that lived literally, you know, within streets away, within blocks away, that had never met each other and didn't know that there were other Stitchers there, you know, and so they created their own community and they still have that. They're in Weirville, and I think we'll see that in Woodfin too, which is the little name of the town that will technically be in North Asheville. And so, you know, I think that has a lot of positive benefit. And then of course you have the relationships that develop that are part of the larger family, you know, kind of people that come from other places and they come together though. It's fun. Like there's a good friend and customer that comes up from Waynesville, and she and her brother come in, and they just happened to be at the Baird house the other day when we went over to work, and they were dropping by, and so I got to see them and talk to them. But they're part of my family now too, you know. And so you have little pods of people that come together, and it's almost like you're seeing your cousins and your aunts and your uncles. Everybody just comes to the house on Sunday and visits, and that's what I miss. That is what I miss. You know, I mean, I can cut fabric and I can help with thread, and you know, I love it when that all comes together. But what I really miss is that feeling of community, you know, that you get with people. And it can happen with people that walk in for the very first time. You know, I've had people that come in for the first time that I feel like I know them forever. And that's kind of cool too, you know. And then it can happen with people that just come back over and over. And so it's fun for me. That's the joy of it. And I think that's true for a lot of people too. Once they find a shop, you know, if they're able to go to a local shop, is a shop that makes them feel that way. You know, they'll go back for a skein of thread.
Right.
You can buy that thread at Michael's, but you don't. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Give us where are we at? You were targeting Easter with the Baird house.
Yeah.
Give us a picture of where you're at with the house and opening it. And what are we going to see when we're there? Are we going to have each room with a different theme or how?
So, yeah, we're pretty close. We're down to a checklist now, which is great because, you know, I'm always glass half full. I'm sure you realize that now, but because I've changed that opening date many times. But we really are just a few things on the checklist. So I think that we'll be in there in May. I don't know when in May, but I think we'll be in there in May. We're not going to make Easter, sadly. That's just a couple weeks away. But I think we'll have our permit by Easter, which is great because, you know, once we get the permit, what happens then is, and we'll probably be doing this weekend, we empty out the house. And then we have the house cleaned. We clean it. We hire people to clean it. Then we paint it and then we put stuff back in. And we'll probably not have the upstairs ready because those couple rooms up there might take a little bit more work with painting and stuff, and we don't need them to open the shop. So the downstairs will be open in the foyer. And so when you come into the shop, the room on the left is the thread room, and it has two windows. One of them's a big bay window that looks out on the kind of the parking lot area, and one of them looks out on the porch. And that's the thread room. And they've got a lot of natural light in there, which will be great. And there'll be a table in the bay window where you can use the natural light to kind of look at your threads. We'll try to have most, if not all, of our different threads in there. And we'll put a few of our slider walls back up, you know, that we made. We can't get them all up, but we'll put a few of them up. And so, you know, we still have the same threads, Weak Style Works, Gentle Arts, Classic Color Works. We have Classic Color Works, Belle Soie. You know, we've got the Soie d'Alger Needlepoint Ink. I won't go through them all. There's a lot of thread to fit in there, so that'll be fun. And so that'll be that room. And if you go the other direction to your right-hand side, you'll walk into the Great Room. And the Great Room will have the checkout counter. It has another big bay window. It'll have a little seating bench there. So the big A-frame shelves that we made for the other shop, we are going to tear those apart. And the bottom part, which is where the storage part was, some of those will get made into bench seats for people to sit. Some of them will become something else. And then all of those shelves that made up the big A-frames, those go on the walls. And so you'll find the charts all around the walls. And so that'll have all the, you know, the physical charts in it. It'll have some scissors and stuff in it, and the checkout counter. It'll be the main shop area that has all the fun stuff in it. And that's where the little station will be if you want to, you know, print out your PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last room going back through there is the linen room. And in the linen room, you'll have the banding armoire, the cabinet that had all the banding in it. And all around the walls, you'll have the linen displayed a little bit differently than what we did before, because, you know, we had it in those containers. We've got so much fabric. That'll be a challenge too. But we have some ideas of how we're going to do it. To display it, to keep it in the Victorian theme, because the house is Victorian, we have most of them are black, but there might be a few colors of picture frames. And each picture frame will have linen laced inside of it as if it were a picture. And then on the corner is a little hook that'll have a little swatch ring that shows you either the different counts or the different colors that linen might come in. But so the room will look like an old parlor in a way, because you'll have all these picture frames, but instead of pictures, they will actually have linens in them. And so, you know, if you wanted to, you could take them down and match on the table and see what your threads look like, or you can look up there and figure them out. And probably not all of our linens, because we just have so many, but you'll have them, you know, covered with the swatch cards and stuff like that. And then underneath all that, you will have the opportunity to, you know, look at the linen and pull the linen that you want. And we'll have a table in there too if we need to cut a little bit. And also in there, we'll have models on the walls. And so there will be models on the walls wherever there is space. So, and this house will have picture railing. So I don't know if you're familiar with picture railing, but picture railing, it didn't before, but it will now. So picture railing goes around the edge of the room, and it's like a molding that's about a foot down from the ceiling. And then you have these ornate little hooks that kind of go over the top of the molding. And then you can hang things off of that. And it's a pretty old fashioned style. And so that's what all the pictures will hang from, so that we're not damaging our walls over and over with nails and stuff, because we do have this beautiful 150-year-old wood in there that we're trying to, you know, preserve.
Yeah. Right.
So probably most of our Sassafras samplers models will be in there. And that room was originally a very unattractive room. So when we bought the house, it had this really not pretty paint. And I guess it was the main room that maybe the older man lived in up until he died. But it was really not pretty. And so we named it the Ugly Room while we were working on it, because it was really ugly. And so we called it the Ugly Room for years. Well, now it's going to be the Swan Room. So the linen room is the Swan Room, and we'll have some models of different swans. And, you know, one of our listeners actually stitched for me a blackbird with the Swan House. and sent it to me to be displayed in there. And it was such a wonderful gift, you know, but there'll be lots of models that have swans in there along with, you know, the Sassafras Samplers models too. So it'll be a really neat kind of room, I think. And then the shipping room is behind that, and it's the kitchen. And so it'll have some kitchen-esque kind of things in it that we need as, you know, humans, but it's also where we'll do our shipping from too. And so there's a porch coming off the back there, an L-shaped kind of porch. And right outside that porch is where that patio will be with some places to sit and just enjoy the sun. So, and then the foyer actually has this really cool nook underneath the stairs, and we've got something really special planned for that, kind of Harry Potter-ish. So if you think of Mr. Ollivander's wand shop, it's got that feel about it because it's kind of small, and so that'll be a fun place, and we'll have something special right there. And then on the stairway going up is a huge wall. And that's where we'll hang some antiques. And so they'll be hanging down and you'll be able to see the antiques and probably some models too, because we'll have to have some room for some models. And then if you made it upstairs, the upstairs has an office where we'll have a table, you know, for meetings and stuff and maybe some stitch-ins. And then it also has two guest rooms up there and a really big, beautiful restroom. There's a restroom downstairs too, but the one upstairs has a clawfoot tub in it. it's pretty fancy schmancy. and then the guest rooms up there, if you wanted to come and stay. And the guest rooms are kind of cool because they actually open up to each other. So there was fireplaces in the house, and where the fireplace came out of those rooms up there, we left the space instead of putting the wall back, and we put French doors there. So if you're staying with a friend and you want to open up those French doors and stitch together, then you can do that in those two rooms up there. So it's kind of a neat layout.
Yeah, you just passed over the shipping room. That has to be a real opportunity and plus to be able to plan a space and have shipping room instead of just a corner in the store.
Yeah, and I think we need it. You know, I mean, we do a lot of shipping, and we're pretty organized about it, but you actually do need dedicated space. And that's one of the things that we found in the old shop, because even before we moved out of there, we had moved a lot of our shipping upstairs, and we packed and stuff upstairs. So we kind of created a dedicated space up there. So we did learn that, you know, if it's at all feasible, that you really need a dedicated space for that, because it gets a little bit cluttered. And that's one of the things that we don't want to have our new shop. Our shop in Weaverville, you know, although it felt a little naked at the beginning, by the time we left, there was a ton of stuff in there.
Yes.
You know, and so we still have all of this stuff. But the trick to it is to have all of this stuff available to your customers and not feel like they're tripping over it or having to step over it. And we also want to be, you know, handicap accessible. And that means you have to have clear walkways and all that stuff. And so you have to plan for that, which we have. You know, we widened all the doorways downstairs, and we've built this really beautiful handicap ramp coming in from the front that doesn't look like a handicap ramp at all. It looks like a deck. And so kind of neat. But we really want people to be able to get around in there. It's important to us. And so using the space smart and well is going to be pivotal to your point. And that means keeping that shipping out away from, you know, your shop space, and trying to create an environment in the shop space that does always feel welcoming and warm and not like you're walking into a closet necessarily.
Yeah,
you know?
So, yeah.
And that can happen easily. You know, I mean, that happened to us. We just had stuff everywhere because you get in a hurry, just like you do at home, and, you know, you end up trying to get everything on display. And that's probably one of the biggest things I learned in the first 5 years is what we will do versus what we won't do in terms of carrying inventory. You just can't be everything to everybody. And it was tough when we opened, because people would come in and they would be like, oh, why don't you carry the blah, blah, blah? And we'd be like, oh, maybe we can do that. You know, it was like, why don't you carry painted canvas? And so for a little while, we did have some painted canvas on consignment, you know, and why don't you carry stuff for knitting? And so we had a few knitting needles, and we still have them, you know, we never sold them.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, so you have to kind of narrow down what your fields are. We just can't be that shop that has everything in it, because I feel like when you try to do everything, you just don't do anything well. And so we'll be deep inventory on, you know, what we are good at and what we love, which will be cross stitch and counted needlepoint. Maybe not as deep, but we do have a lot of counted needlepoint options. And so our plan for that going forward, because the trick with that is all the threads. Counted needlepoint, as you know, has a lot of unique threads that you don't necessarily use in cross stitch. So what I think we'll do for the counted needlepoint is we'll offer kitting. You know, we'll have the stuff there to kit it for the charts that we carry for the most part. And we had a lot of canvas already to do that stuff because I like counted needlepoint. And I guess that's the other thing I learned is I can't really sell something that I don't have a passion for, you know. And so we tried to do a little bit of needle felting because we had somebody with us that loved needle felting. And I just not good at it, you know, and so I couldn't really make that happen long term. So it was just an interesting process of what you will and can do versus what you probably shouldn't do. Right. And so that was really useful when you're going into a smaller space, because now I don't have to feel bad about what I don't carry, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's one of the huge benefits of being able to effectively reset your business is all the lessons you've learned. You can start out with a new plan and new parameters that keep yourself in check. And, you come out of it, I think, better for that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I'm pretty comfortable in my own skin now, too. So you have to, you know, anytime you start a new career, you're kind of figuring out who you are. And, you know, I didn't even, this is pretty funny, but, you know, for 30 years, I had not worked with people a lot. You know, I worked with people and I enjoyed my work with people, but it was always in a very professional relationship. You know, it was always, yes, I need you to do this by the end of the day. And you know, you're on conference calls during the night to meet their time zone or whatever, but at the end of the day, you need them to do what you need them to do. Right. And so while I enjoyed working with all the people, it was very different. And so I wasn't actually sure I could do the shop owner thing. And so, but you know, I did it. And at the end of the second week, I was like, wow, I really like people. I had no idea, you know, I was like, I think I was meant to do this. And so, and lo and behold, I still really like the people. And so, you know, learning that about myself and that it is kind of something that I enjoy a lot, which is very fortunate since I kind of went into it, all, you know, everything on, but, you know, getting comfortable with who you are as a person and what you really want out of the experience, because most shop owners don't own shops to get rich, to make money, because we don't.
Right.
We survive at best. We survive, you know, even when times are good, at best you survive. And so almost all profits from shops goes back into inventory. It's just the way it works, you know? And that's not to say they're hobby shops, because we do invest a lot of ourselves in them. They're not hobby shops, but they're not places where you know, produce wealth. They just aren't. And so we do it for the love of it. And so figuring out, you know, what kind of shop owner you want to be and what's important to you for your shop and what to you means success, I think is really, really critical, because if you don't have that in mind, you do try to please everybody and you end up not pleasing yourself at all and not really pleasing most of the people that you work with. And so for me, you know, knowing what's important to me, which is community, you know, teaching, giving something back, creating a good space. Those are the important things for me. And if I can do those things, then I know that I'm going to be happy. And if I'm happy, the people who come back will be happy, you know? Right. So, so learning that in the last 5 years has been really, really, really critical, because I did not learn that in the first couple of years. In the first couple of years, we were just trying to figure out how to, you know, survive in a different way. It was pre-pandemic, but it was when things were just really, they were more than what we thought and moving faster than what we thought and trying to stay ahead of that curve and figure out how to mail packages without handwriting and waiting them on. You know, I mean, it was just, you know, that how to hire people for that kind of work, because it was different from what I was used to hiring for. You know, there were a lot of lessons to be learned that were critical to just staying alive. And so with the pandemic came the chance to reflect and figure out, okay, out of all of that, what did what did I really achieve that I meant to? What did, what do I want to keep about it? And what do I want to remake? And, I think I stayed true to myself. I just didn't have a lot of chance to exercise it. I didn't have a chance to, we did create, I think, a space that people loved, because they do love us and they keep coming back, but we didn't get to do that as big as we wanted. You know, it wasn't the main outcome. And so I think, this time around, which is a luxury that a lot of people don't have to do it again, but this time around, I think it'll just be even more about community and, space and teaching. And I think that kind of stuff. So yeah. I'm excited about it.
And I think you have done a great job in building a community online. I know some of the FlossTubers I watch, the Sunshine Stitchers, they mentioned, you're learning stitches and so that teaching you do is very much out there. And I think you've really done a great job and sharing that with the stitching community through this pandemic, even though it's been, crazy times. Crazy.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I try to do it. So, we do classes and stuff, but we also do try to do things that are just free access. And so that's important to me too. And as a shop owner, that's where I feel like it's my responsibility and gladly so. I enjoy it to give something back. And so, I haven't been able to be as, timely with getting that stuff posted, but I've put some content out there that I'm proud of, that people seem to enjoy. And we still have people buying the Learning Stitches, and they buy the book for it from Jeanette Douglas. They buy it from us. And then all the lessons and stuff are free. The beginning needlepoint thing, believe it or not, we have people buying the little kits for that all the time. We actually sold a little kit for the meditation stitch, Gary, for the Fiber Talk. Yeah. Last week. So, I think it's really nice to have that stuff out there, and a lot of other people are doing it too. And I think that's really part and parcel to this renaissance that we have in our industry right now, is that people have realized that it's important to create some free content to make it accessible for people, both free and, whether it's an online paid class, but to make sure it's accessible to people who just can't travel too is pretty key. Yeah. So I appreciate you bringing that up. That's been a big part of it too.
All right, we got to wrap up here pretty quick, but I want to spend a few minutes and talk about your side hustle, Sassafras Samplers. You're starting to find some stride with that.
Yeah. So that's another thing that was kind of unplanned. But I guess I bought my first sampler when I knew I was going to open the shop in 2016. And I said I would never own a sampler if I wasn't willing to share it. And what I had in mind was putting it on display, but that turned into charting it and, doing reproductions. And so Allie Dudley, who we hired in 2018, and she's still with us, she was like 23 or 24 at the time. And I had this software, and I was like, I really don't have time to figure this out. Hey, Allie, can you figure this out? And by the end of the day, she did. And so she's been charting for us now, since then. And she's learned the publishing side of it too. So you not only have to chart the design, but you have to create this booklet or however you're going to, put it out there in its finished format. There's work to do there too. And she learned that part of the software too. And so she's been really key in that. And her actual title here is creative director. So we did that really early on because she is, and so she does all that work for us, and she loves it. She really loves it. She's one of those people that enjoys looking at the charts and putting it in there. And then when it comes to color, we both kind of jump in and figure out what colors it should be. And then I usually write the verbiage for the booklet. But yeah, it took off pretty quick. We own so many more than we've actually put out there. And I don't even know how many we have out there. I want to say we probably got maybe 7 reproductions out there, and we've probably got like 6 or 7 actual original designs too. We've done that too. And we do a lot of original design that we just give away, or we do it for a group that comes in. Like we do one for the soiree every year. We do one for the Valentine's group every year. We create a lot of original designs that don't really end up published publicly, but they're, things that we've done, and maybe one day we will. So that's really taken off too. And it is a side business. It is and it isn't part of Sassy Jack Stitchery. It's definitely kind of on the side ran as its own little business. But we didn't publish anything last year just because we didn't have the capacity to do it, but we kept charting. So now we're looking at publishing 12 different samplers, reproduction samplers this year. We published one. One's at the printer. Beth.
I can't wait for that one to come.
Yeah. And then Mabel Tuke actually is coming out. She's already ready. So we're going to launch her. I'm just trying to get the Bristol back and out before I release Mabel Tuke.
And Beth would like a copy when that comes out, if you can fit it in.
Yeah. And then the next one coming out is the Saxon sampler. And we gave it away for free a few years ago in the newsletter. And so now we published it into this really beautiful booklet. And it'll be next after Mabel Tuke. And then we've got like just a whole bunch more that are coming out through the rest of the year. We'll have 12. They may not be in the month that we meant them to be, but there'll be 12 of them that come out this year. We have a new webpage designed for it. And we'll be launching that soon. So we've got enough now that they just kind of need their own home. And we probably won't wholesale them. You know, people keep asking me. I've had some really nice shops and friends, shop owner friends that have asked me about wholesaling. I don't know if I'm going to do that because I just don't know if I want it to explode like that. But I'm kind of happy with just having it here with us, you know. And we'll probably keep doing it that way. And yeah, right now you can only get Sassafras samplers through Sassy Jack Stitchery, but you can get a lot of them in PDF and as well as hard copy booklets, because that helps the folks that are overseas, you know, be able to download them.
That whole PDF thing, you know, that's the overseas market is without PDFs, that's tough to do. Yeah, that's becoming more and more critical as time goes on, no doubt about it. All right, one last thing, and then we got to wrap up. You mentioned Allie, you mentioned your husband. You know, without those two, holy smokes, where would you be?
I don't know. I might be doing taxes for a living, which is not my dream come true. Let me just say that is not my dream come true. You know, God brings you gifts, and Allie walked in the door looking for thread. And, you know, we recruited her, and Everett, you know, got involved with the wrong woman at the wrong time in his life, and he's stuck with it now. So, you know, but, you know, both of them are doing things that they love. Allie really loves what she's doing, and Everett, and she's also working, she works as a weaving instructor at Brycetown at the Campbell Folk Art School here, too. So she's got another gig because she's a weaver at heart. And Everett really loves woodwork. He really does. And so even though it's been a chore to get everything done, I think he's so proud of everything that he's created. And it's such good quality. I think he's just really, he has enjoyed it despite himself. You know? So I think he's ready to get back to his own projects, though. But he, he's been a huge help. And I do credit our success for sure. What little bit of success that, you know, we can claim to those two folks along with a lot of people, you know, it takes a village. And, so we appreciate all of our friends and our customers and people that have been in our corner, especially during this challenging time. So, you know, we thank you guys a lot. I can't tell you how many times, you know, you guys have mentioned us and helped us, and we appreciate you for that. You know, and you know, all the floss tubers that mention us sometimes, and it's just been, it's a collective, it's a village that takes to do that. And it's not just us, you know, lots of shops are supported that way by, you know, people like you and floss tubers and stuff. And that's been such a huge help. So we all appreciate that kind of help because we needed it. So,
yep. All right. Congratulations. 5 years. Looking forward to the Baird House, and always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for doing it.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks everybody for listening. Bye.